Welcome to the Author Factor Podcast, where we break down exactly how smart business owners and corporate leaders leverage the powerful advantage of being a published book author. I'm your host, Mike Capuzzi, and you're in the right place if you want profitable nonfiction book writing tips. Imagine exposing a federal cover-up and becoming a beacon for 62% of the American population living by levies. My guest today is not just a powerhouse advocate, but she's also an award-winning author. Sandy Rosenthal is a New Orleans author whose debut book, Words Whispered in Water, is about how she exposed the federal government's campaign to fool the American people about why New Orleans flooded during Hurricane Katrina. She's also the founder of the nonprofit Levees.org, an organization dedicated to making levees safer in the United States. Sandy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So that was, you and I were just talking about this. It's hard to believe it was, 15, 16 years ago now?
18.
Is it 18 already? Oh, yeah. Getting old. I can remember that August day when it happened. I can distinctly remember hearing about it living in Pennsylvania. But as I shared with you, I actually did a church trip a couple months later to go down and help rebuild. I can just remember the devastation was beyond belief. Nothing like I'd ever seen before.
We were eternally grateful for groups like yours.
Yeah, we stayed in Slidell and went over to New Orleans. And I was looking at some of the pictures recently and just like amazed. Hey, this is about you and your book. So I want to learn a little bit more, Sandy, about you, your background. And then obviously I want to hear more about why you decide to write this important book.
Before the levees broke in New Orleans, I lived what could be called a perfect life. I'd reached a point in my career where I didn't have to work full-time, 9 to 5. I could work part-time and still have all of the cred that went with that. I only had one child at home at the time. I'm down from 3. I was able to do things during the day, like play tennis instead of at night on the weekend. And so my life was just fine. And then surprise, surprise. This is a surprise very much like Acapulco, where the hurricane went from a tropical storm to a Cat 5 in 24 hours, everyone was caught off guard. Well, we were caught off guard too. No one in their wildest dreams thought those levees would break. And as everyone knows, the whole world knows, over 1,400 people died in a few hours. So my life was turned upside down in the space of a few hours. And as for why I wrote that book, if you were old enough to watch TV, you were watching that disaster. Everybody was watching that disaster unfold on TV, except for one thing. You know that the city flooded. You know that a lot of people died. You don't know why. You may think you know, but you don't. And that is why I wrote my book, to clear up that misperception that it was just a huge storm. It was not. It was not a huge storm. It was actually engineering mistakes by people. People didn't design those levees right and build them right. And that's why I wrote the book, because if that weren't bad enough, the people who made that mistake, the federal government, tried to hide that from the American people and from Congress.
Did you know at the time, Sandy? How did you know at the time, or was it, how long after Katrina hit, did you decide to publish the book?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm not an engineer. So how could I know? How could Sandy know what no one else knew? There's two reasons for that. One is I was in a unique position. I was in a unique space. My husband had told me to pack for 3 weeks before we evacuated. He was an insurance agent, and he just watched Hurricane Andrew come through Florida and the devastation that had caused. And he said, pack for 3 weeks. We won't be back. There'll be no electricity. The streets will be impassable. And I did. And because of that, and because of the fact that my house didn't flood and my husband's business didn't flood, I was in a unique space. I didn't have to worry about a contractor and FEMA. And I was watching the news come in. I was watching television, listening to the radio. Nothing made sense. How could a storm a hurricane that was no stronger than anything else that had ever hit. It wasn't like this, anything was really different about this one. How could it have done all that damage? And I realized something's wrong. And so I started asking questions, and I immediately got pushback from, bingo, the Army Corps of Engineers. Why would they be going after me? A relative nobody. And that gave me evidence I must be either absolutely right or certainly on the right track.
Wow. So when did the book come out?
The book came out in 2020. Yes, 2020, actually 15 years after the levees broke. Now, why did it take me so long to write a book? Well, because I was busy running levees.org, and I'm not an author. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a writer. So it took me 5 years to write that book. But I wrote it because, as I mentioned already, if you were old enough to watch TV, you were watching that disaster, which was the worst engineering disaster in the history of the United States and in the world, second only to Chernobyl. And I just had to write that book because I felt like the people of New Orleans were being blamed. They were being called stupid for living there and imbeciles for wanting to go back home and rebuild. It had to be done. I didn't want to do it, but it had to be done. And so I wrote the book.
Wow. So as far as the timeline, let's just take a left turn for a moment and talk about levees.org, the organization. You founded that organization, correct?
I founded it just a few months, about 8 weeks after the storm, so 2 months after the levees broke. And I founded it with my son, Stanford. He had just turned 15 years old. Kids know everything. He knew how to build websites, and he knew how to use social media. And together, we founded levees.org because we just felt that the truth needed to get out there, and we used whatever means we could. And still are trying to get the truth out there. There are still people that still don't know why the levees broke in New Orleans.
Without getting too deep, I'd like to hear more. I have an engineering background, so I'm always interested in hearing this kind of thing. I don't practice it, but in your opinion, with all the research you've done and what you've lived through, what happened back in 2005?
Well, first of all, it's not my opinion. It's the conclusion of the experts. But the Army Corps of Engineers tried to hide that information as best they could. So the experts, they concluded that the Army Corps of Engineers in the 1980s was behind schedule and looking for ways to save money. That's not uncommon. And in the process of looking for ways, they did a test to figure out how to save money on steel. Steel is very expensive. It's expensive to buy and expensive to drive into the ground. So they did a study and determined they only needed to drive steel sheet pilings into the ground 16 feet instead of 46. And they sent out new guidances, only drive those steel sheet pilings down 16 feet. And when Hurricane Katrina's really moderate storm surge arrived, it wasn't anything higher than they were designed for, than the levees were designed for, they fell over. They just, in fact, one canal, they fell over on both sides. That's a testament to how weak those walls were. So the Corps made a mistake. But rather than own up to that mistake, the Army Corps of Engineers spent millions harassing me and my group and fooling the American public. And they almost got away with it, if not for my organization and the book I wrote.
And Sandy, just for some folks who might not remember or maybe weren't alive or don't know what a levee is, just real high level, what is a levee?
It's a very simple structure. It's a structure, really no different from a house is a structure. A bridge is a structure. A levee is a structure, but it looks like a hill because they're usually covered with grass. So to the untrained eye, it looks like a big hill. But if you look along the edges of any great river, Mississippi, Missouri, Ohio River, they've got these high hills on both sides of them. And they look like they're there naturally, but they actually were built by men. And the concept of levee building has been understood for well over a century. So those levees should have held. They should not have broken in something that a spring storm could have broken them with.
And before we leave your organization, because again, it's fascinating. This is something you did, from the grassroots. What is levees.org doing today? I know it's still something you're part of and still working with. What are you guys doing, all these years
right
later?
Right now, we want to make sure that every single student that graduates from engineering school, that they receive instruction about engineering failures and the lessons that can be learned from those failures. And right now, there is no such thing going on in engineering schools. So some professors may find engineering failures interesting and may talk about them, but there is nothing requiring professors to expose and instruct students about engineering failures. And we have made it our goal to change that.
Quick pause. If you're here, you're obviously interested in the power of a well-crafted business book. Have yet to write your first book or thinking about the next one? Make your move. Head over to bitesizebooks.com and secure a session to brainstorm your book idea with me, Mike Capuzzi. With over 240 business leaders and entrepreneurs turned successful authors under my guidance, let's explore if we're the right fit. Your author journey begins today. Now, back to the show. So let's go back to your book. Obviously, given the topic, the amount of, I'm sure, even research and people you had to talk to and things you had to just, you know, uncover and the walls that you hit, no pun intended. Let's talk about your author journey. So you decided to write this book. I'm sure you must have, because Levies.org had existed for a number of years at that point. You must have realized you were going to be bumping into a lot of roadblocks, a lot of bureaucratic stuff. Is that what happened?
I really didn't expect so much pushback. Really? I thought, who would be against having safe levies? Who would have a problem with that? And in the beginning, I ended up getting pushback from some of the very people who had been harmed by this disaster. But in the beginning, it turned up it was political. You have to keep in mind, at that time, we had a Republican president, and we had a Democrat mayor and a Democrat governor. And I realized it was political, and I learned to ignore that. You know, because sometimes people are blinded by Democrat, Republican, and I learned to ignore that. But what surprised me is so many engineering organizations pushed back against me. And I realize now it's because the Army Corps of Engineers had this huge budget given to them by Congress to rebuild those levees. And had any engineer showed any support for the mission of levees.org, that could have ended up with them not getting a share of that money, you know, that their engineering company. So that was a surprise to me. But once I figured it out, you know, anything, once you can figure it out, you can manage with it. It's when you don't know what's going on that things can be very, very difficult. So there was some pushback, but we dealt with it. We moved on. We never give up. And that's the most important thing. Don't give up.
When the book was released, tell me a little bit about that. Because you said it was in 2020. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It was probably during the pandemic. That was a great year. Yeah, a great year to release a book. I've talked to so many authors that released their book that year. Tell me about that. Did you publish or self-publish? You worked with a publisher, right?
No, it's a published book.
That's right.
It's published by a Florida-based publisher called Mango.
Okay. So when that book was released, tell me about that experience. What were you doing to get the word out there and share it? Obviously, during another disaster, if you will, how'd you get the word out about it?
Well, the first thing I did is I recognized that I wasn't alone. There were a lot of other people with a book coming out during the right at the start of the pandemic. So I very quickly, told myself, don't feel sorry for yourself. You're not in this alone. And I became a Zoom expert. And I learned everything about Zoom that was possible to learn. I learned about the bells and the whistles. I learned how to take advantage of all of the things Zoom really has to offer, which at the time in 2020, Zoom was the platform. There weren't many others at that time. And I marketed myself as having a pro Zoom studio, able to Zoom myself into your classroom or your bookstore at any time. And it worked just because I was ready. It was like opportunity met, preparation met opportunity. And it was the Zooms that I did were so popular. I was doing three a week for years.
So with that, the book launched and got out there. Now that you look back, a couple of years later, Sandy, is there anything, that you would do differently, whether it's during the book writing phase or the book marketing phase that you'd want to share with our listeners?
I like to share two things. Before you settle with a publisher, be sure to ask the question, will the book come out in hardback? I didn't ask that. And my book only came out in a soft cover, mm-hmm. in a paperback, which really surprised me. So that's a question that I didn't even think to ask. So ask that question. And also find out, what will your publisher do to help you promote your book? And be sure that you get that in writing, because if they put it in writing, well, then they're going to have to do it. Assume nothing.
That's great advice. I've self-published 20 of my own books. I have not worked with a publisher other than our own company, but a lot of times the published authors that we do speak with are pretty much shocked at how little a publisher really does for you when it comes to promote a book. Obviously, you have the brand of the publisher, but it's still up to you, the author. Did you find that to be the same?
I did find that to be the same. I don't know anybody that really likes their publisher. I don't know anybody. And I know a lot of authors. And I think you just have to accept that. I'm going to tell your listeners what I've been saying a long time. When I got a publisher, what mattered to me was that stamp on the inside cover that I could show I am not self-published. Nothing against self-publishing, mm-hmm. okay? But I'm not self-published, and that's about it. There's not a whole lot more you get from your publisher than that stamp on the inside cover, and be prepared for that. And if you can not do what I did and ask those questions, will it come out in hardback? You know, and what is it that the publisher will do? Then you've got a leg to stand on when the time comes.
I'm sure this book was a monumental task, even though you had been living it for 15 years almost at that point. Do you see, are you one and done when it comes to your book author journey? Do you have another book in you in the future?
I do not have another book in me in the future. I call myself a one book wonder. I'm not a writer, and it was difficult and painful for me to write this book. But the beauty of the book that I had is the facts haven't changed. Those facts are going to be the same forever. And so that I think 100 years from now, I believe 100 years from now, this book is going to be every bit as important as it is right now. I'm very glad I wrote it. What I'd rather do now is move on to other sorts of things besides writing another book. Now, don't get me wrong. If Harper Press or some big publisher approached me and said, we'd like you to write a book, gave me a contract and a down payment, I would definitely consider it. But mm-hmm. unless something like that happens, no, this is probably going to be it.
And the future of levies.org, is that something, is your son still involved with that?
Yes, he is. When he went off to college, he went to Washington University. He said, Mom, I've been helping you for 4 years. I'm ready to move on. I said, thank you, son, for that. And off to college he went, and then he became a software engineer, not surprisingly. And about 4 or 5 years after that, he called me up one day and said, I'd like to start helping you again. And so we're a team again.
That's awesome. That's a very unique and powerful story.
Excuse me. Not only did Stanford design my very first website, which you can still find if you use the Wayback Machine, mm-hmm. but he also designed the current site, which I'll be sharing the URL for that in a moment.
Very good. Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, I want to hear, even you say you might be one and done. Obviously, this was an important project for you. It's an important book, not only for you to write, but for other people to learn, what happened back then. I'd love to hear about the impact being, writing this book and being this book's author has made to you, your organization, to the world. Like, what does the impact mean?
What I am very happy about is that no matter what, you've heard or what you've seen or what someone you trust said to you, that's the full unvarnished story, which really no one could have written but me. I can say this without perjury. There is no expert with more knowledge than I have about this disaster that happened. No, I'm correcting myself. It's a catastrophe. It's a bona fide catastrophe, no different from Acapulco. It's remarkable there wasn't more death in Acapulco, and which I can only attribute to they've been through so many hurricanes. They must have hurricane plans, and they must have been on some sort of full lockdown. It's remarkable that there was not more death. But again, back to this disaster, we were all caught off guard. No one in their wildest dreams ever thought these levees could break. And I wanted to make sure that everyone knows that. I want for people to be talking about, not necessarily my book, but I want for people to be talking about this disaster 100 years from 2005.
Well, Sandy, how can our listeners, where's the best place to get the book? How can they learn more about you and your organization?
I'm keeping it really simple. One URL, levees.org, LEVEES.org. You want to know more about me? It's there. You want to know more about the book? It's there. You want to know about levees.org? It's there. You want to know about this campaign that we're starting make sure every engineering student knows what happened here in New Orleans? It's there.
Very good. Well, Sandy, thank you very much. Having experienced it in some little capacity, nothing like you did, I again still just remember what that was like down there. And, to see that area being able to rebound, obviously taking years, and to see concerned citizens like yourself, trying to do their part to, make everything better in the future so it doesn't happen again, congratulations on that.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you. Volunteers rock.
Thank you, Sandy. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Author Factor podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on Apple iTunes. Subscribe, tell a friend, and go grab the notes and extras at theauthorfactor.com. And to learn more about my unique short book publishing services, please check out bitesizebooks.com. See you next time.